Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again. We're in Susie's kitchen and the kettle is about to boil, but we were so enthusiastic about starting to talk that we're going to submit you. We had the postman last time. We're going to have the whistling kettle any second. There we go.
Here it goes.
I came
a very
here.
Indignant shriek.
I came here after Callie died and you gave me hawthorn tea for my heart, which was lovely.
Yeah. Dear Callie. Dear hawthorn. So, yes, I'm glad you said that, because last time after we'd ended, I realised that there are foraging stories. You have foraging stories and we didn't get to hear them. Please tell us.
My foraging story.
Well, not just any old foraging story. I want the foraging story of self-heal, please.
Okay, well that, having been so rude about the internet last time, that came from the internet, because a lot of people complain about the fact that the internet now looks at what you've looked at and then sends you an advertisement for it.
Right.
And that's sort of like the law of attraction. But the law of attraction works naturally that way. It kind of is. It's a man-made version of it through algorithms,
isn't it? Yeah, I guess.
Because what you put your attention on, you get more of. And I was on Facebook, and I've got a friend, Kathy Nicholson, who listens. Hi, Kathy. And she mentions finding self-heal in the garden and how you find what you need right in front of you. Well, our other beagle bitch, Dessie, is allergic to fleas and has had some fleas and really needed a bit of help with her skin. So I thought, well, there you are, self-heal. Mm-hmm. What does it look like? And can I find some on my dog walk? And how do I make a salve out of it? Because I can put shop-bought stuff on her, but let's heal her from the land she lives on.
Mm-hmm.
So I went for the dog walk, and I knew intuitively that this walk was a light place that was likely to have self-heal. And having red braiding sweetgrass, I knew not to take the first plant. Mm-hmm. And I'd never known that before. It's just a simple etiquette that's so simple to learn. Never take the first one when foraging.
Absolutely.
And as you said, never take the last one, because it could be the only one.
Yeah.
And why should the first one offer itself to you if it's
Anyway. Yeah.
But so I walked down through the woodland where I suspected there would be some, and there was some, and I didn't pick the first one, and I hoped there would be some more, but I had to accept that there might not be.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept walking, and then there's a section, this is a footpath to Throwley, and there's a section where there's stones put in because it's so wet in the winter that you have to jump between these stones, and it's quite funny with beagles behind you jumping between stones, and they go splosh into the water in the winter. And blah, 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 blah. But anyway, there was, in this very dry time, this was a couple of weeks ago now, there was a whole mat of self-heal over one of the stones dying.
Hmm.
And it was flipped up. And it just said, take me, give me water, and I will grow for you. So I said, on the way back, and if I still see you on the way back, just to double check that I wasn't just imagining it. And on the way back, I saw it and pulled it up, and it just came straight into my hands, and I went and planted it on Callie's grave, which was lovely, with lots of water. And then, of course, later that day, walking around the garden, what did I see in the grass? Self-heal. I'd never noticed it before. I knew there was a kind of bluey flower that sometimes turned up, but it's everywhere in our garden. It's like I summoned it.
Yeah. Callie summoned it, you summoned it. Yeah, that absolutely, it's starting to be really a core held belief for me that if you live somewhere, I don't know what period of time you'd need to live there. I mean, I guess long enough for a seed to germinate and turn into a plant. But when you live somewhere, that land will offer you what you need. That has definitely been the case for me over many, many, many years, and in really quite radical ways, you know. Mm. So, last year, there was, well, a forest, frankly, the most ridiculous amount of evening primrose oil out in my garden. And I was having the old, you know, like crash and burn, what do you call it? What's that thing we have? Turning into a crone thing. What's that called?
Menopause.
Menopause! perfect. Absolute.
Crash and burn, I think that's a very good phrase.
The mush for brains that you get at some aspects of menopause. Perfect. Anyway, so that, where you're like, you know, just the juiciest witch ever imaginable, followed by crash, the most woman who can't even string a sentence together. You know, evening primrose oil, amazing. Evening primrose leaves, petals in your salad, amazing. I really needed it. I was in a, almost unbelievably to say, I was in an even worse state last year. And literally there were times when I could hardly string a sentence together. It wasn't terrible for me at all, but maybe because my garden was overflowing with evening primrose. And so I had evening primrose petals in my salad every day for maybe 2 months. And, you know, I can honestly say that whilst I understand what the symptoms of menopause are, I haven't really suffered from them, because every time there's been something, there has been its remedy right outside my door. Now, I have never planted an evening primrose plant in my garden. Last year, it was full of them. This year, there isn't a single one. Literally not even one.
Because you don't need it.
Because I don't need it. But now, every time I go out for any sort of extravaganza past my own front door, yarrow especially, but also dandelion, also plantain, and also to a degree the flowers of clover are all going pick me, pick me, pick me. And what's the thing that's coming up for me? Again, it's not terrible, but it's right there. Some digestive tract issues. Those are all things which heal the digestive tract.
Yarrow, plantain.
Dandelion.
Dandelion. In salads?
I guess. I mean, I have them in salads and I make them into tea, and I'm also making tincture.
Yes. Fascinating.
And you know, it's not just my experience. My experience is over and over and over again that when I need a plant, it'll be right there. But I also know that so many anecdotal stories from other people of I needed a plant and it was right there. I remember once having, just quickly, giving somebody a shamanic healing and the spirit saying, you need plantain, and them going, I don't really know what plantain looks like, and me going, well, it looks like this and it's everywhere. And her going, I don't think it grows near me. And I said, I promise you, it's absolutely everywhere. And she went home and she rang me up and she went, it's so funny, there's almost more plantain in my garden than there is grass. But I've never seen it.
It is, it's the never seen it, not trained to look for these things. And exactly the same with me for plantain, because the self-heal is really helping Desi. But I did a bit more research and I can't remember why I was looking at plantain, probably because you mentioned it at some point. And it's for insect bites as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing stuff.
So I thought, well, that's perfect then. I've made a salve of self-heal and I'm going to make another salve of plantain and I'm going to mix the two together.
Fantastic.
And, of course, I went out on my walk and thought, I wonder if there's any plantain. Found a bit of plantain, came home, potted across the common, which is just outside, right, covered in this stuff. Yeah. Went into the garden, covered in this stuff. So, yes, it's the earth just offers herself to us. And that's what the divine does. It offers itself. It does not insist. It just offers.
But also we are an offering of her to her also. Yes. And I can't remember if we said it out loud on the podcast or whether it was something that you and I were saying to one another. Oh, my God, it might not even have been you and I. But anyway, I'm sorry. A thread that has come up a lot for me recently, both in my healing work direct from the spirits for other people and reflected back to me by sisters, peers, is a really, really clear message around our creativity as humans, our capacity to make beauty is a fundamental part of what we are here to be and to do, to be beauty, to see beauty, to know beauty, and to create beauty. And that beauty is created and made in partnership with the divine. And that once that spark of the divine, if you like, has come through us as our creativity, it is our responsibility to share it. Because it's for everyone. Because it came from the gods.
Yes.
And yes. so we're here for that too. We're here to be plantain when plantain's needed. Yes. A story about foraging when it's needed, a song, a beautiful prayer by St. Patrick, a Kabbalah something or other with lots of words that I will forget before you're even out the room. You know, just all that. That's our job, is yes. to also flower in this way, to bring beauty and to share.
Yes, absolutely. And I take this into whenever I do communion, I take everything I learn from you and what I'm learning from the land and I'm learning from everything into that. Because it makes the words shine. In the old days, communion, the Tridentine Mass was built on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. It's a ritual. The rituals which you work in the pattern of the universe just work. Mm-hmm. They just work. It's not quite on the Tridentine now, but the way my bishop has taught us to do it, it's the same pattern. So I will always take something into a Mass. And I was doing a Raphael Thanksgiving Mass for a friend who'd been ill. And whom we went to look after a couple of weeks ago. And I was sort of wait to see what came through. And what actually came through was that to take communion holds you accountable for everything that God has given and that human hands have made from it.
Perfect.
Makes you accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what we say is what earth has given and human hands have made, these wafers, this wine, we now eat because this is the body of Christ, not the body of Jesus the man, but the body of the creation. Mm. You gave the ingredients. We've turned them into something beautiful, or in the case of a communion wafer, totally tasteless. But quite frequently, I'll use bread.
Yeah.
Because that's actually what we do at Lammas time in the Christian church. We will take the first loaf and use that for the communion bread.
Excellent.
The first word made from that harvest, yeah. which is a way of melding the two together. But it's this difficult thing of dominion over the earth. We have got dominion because we can destroy it. We can. But that doesn't mean to say we should.
Totally, yeah.
I have dominion. I can pick something even if it doesn't want me to. It doesn't mean I should. Mm. For me to have dominion is the whole concept of noblesse oblige.
Yes.
Which I was trained as a child because of certain delusions about our breeding that my mother had at one point. But noblesse oblige is the duty of the privileged one to be kind and to share. Mm. And if only white privilege were noblesse oblige, it wouldn't be white privilege.
No.
It would be the duty to share and to understand and to communicate.
Although noblesse, I mean, yes, but no, but noblesse oblige is fundamentally also rooted in colonialism and the patriarchy because it's standing on a ground where there are rich and poor rather than where everyone has enough.
I'll go with that, but as a stepping stone, I think it's important.
It's a bloody sight better than we're doing right now.
It's a, for yes, sure. But I absolutely take that to point. We shouldn't even need that. But it's like, if you're an older soul, I'm not saying I'm an old soul, but I'm not first down. Older soul has a duty to teach these things.
Mm. So the old soul's like the idea of the bodhisattva, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. And Kabbalah teaches we're on four journeys because it accepts reincarnation, which the Pharisees in Jesus' day did as well, and the ancient people did. And in fact, there's two bits in the Gospels which are really... bring me back to reincarnation because I'm just going off on a track here. Okay. There's two bits in the Gospels that actually talk of reincarnation. There's a bit where people say, Jesus says, who do you say I am? Who do people say I am? And they go, some say you're John the Baptist, who'd only just recently died, and some say you're Elijah come again.
Mm.
That's reincarnation.
Yeah.
And there's another one too where they say to him, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus actually says, neither. He was born blind to demonstrate the glory of God on earth. Which actually has a whole wider thing in that when you're blind, you use your ears, you use your hands, and you could demonstrate the glory of God through other aspects.
Mm.
But that's the wonderful thing about the Bible is there's reams in one sentence. You go through reams and reams and reams. And I have forgotten the point I was going to make about reincarnation. But four journeys. We're on four journeys. The first journey, which is the one we're not taking successfully now, and this is impacting on everything else, is you come down and learn to live on the land.
Mm-hmm.
You live in an indigenous culture and you learn how to live with the land, from the land. And then you grow and you learn things like the movement of the planets or the cycles and a little more about life. And you teach that on. So the first journey is to learn how to live. The second journey is to teach on to others. Third journey is to ascend a little more. And the fourth journey is to go back home forever. But the teaching also says that the more experienced and wise you get, the less you're prepared to go back home because you want to be here to help.
Isn't there
Oh, there's a suspicious look here. Oh,
yeah, that so smacks again, I'm afraid.
No, go on, this is interesting.
Utter colonialism, just because there's a suggestion there that somehow to teach, I don't know, the ways of God or something is in some way above to be indigenous, and I refute that utterly.
Okay. No, I will also get that, but I will also say, and this was just what came straight into my head. I've met Stephen Jenkinson a couple of times, the guy him too, the orphan man from the Orphan Wisdom website. And he spoke at Dartmouth when I was ill. And at the end of his talk, I went and knelt at his feet and asked for his blessing. Now, you can say that's hierarchical if you like, but I'm not intending it to be hierarchy because that man was a wiser, older soul than I. And I wanted to kneel at his feet, say thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for teaching me. He wasn't setting himself up as being a wiser, older soul, but he was teaching. Mm-hmm. So how is that not hierarchical in a way? That the wiser person teaches?
No, I'm not arguing with the idea that it's not a good thing to teach, but maybe I'm just being absolutely ridiculously romantic here, but in another world entirely, if we are living with Indigenous wisdom, what need do we have of teaching?
But we're not.
No, I know we're not.
That's just it. I mean, the idea of a tradition like Kabbalah is to try and wind us back to the traditional tradition. To the indigenous life, but to wind us through the steps of it. Because I don't know that you can actually get a child who's lived in the heart of London all their life and experienced prejudice and never seen a cow to live happily in the country to start with. It would take time. And it would take some people very wise to help them live in a village.
So do the teachings of Kabbalah as they exist right now predicated upon the knowing that the world is not as it could be? It is not the more beautiful world that we know it is possible. It is the utterly broken world of the present, and that therefore to say that you come around once as an Indigenous person, you come around once as a teacher, you come around once as whatever was after that, and then you're on the trip home.
No. It's over hundreds and hundreds of years, and you sort of go up, down, up, down, up. You have a life to learn and a life to teach on what you learn, a life, another life to learn, another life to teach on. It goes on and on and on and on and on. In the end, the idea is that you're complete. You've experienced all that the life has to offer on this planet, or maybe other planets. So you can go directly from... You could go straight from a cardinal to a Vietnamese boat person in the next life because it's the next stage of learning. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to... I don't know whether a cardinal's a good thing or not. No, it's probably not. No, it's... That's actually a great, very good question because, the answer is no because Kabbalah's as corrupt as everything else. Mm. In these lines, and there's two forms of Kabbalah. I study one and I don't study the other. That's very Jewish, you know, one synagogue you go to and one synagogue you don't go to. But I study the one I study because it makes more sense to me, but I don't denigrate the other. That's really important. And Kabbalah originally taught that the world is perfect. Mm-hmm. Everything made is perfect. And all evil comes from the misuse of human free will.
Yeah, I absolutely got no argument with that at all.
Because landslides, unless caused by human stupidity like Abba Fan or something like that. It's all the part of the natural world readjusting itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we are responsible for everything that goes wrong and responsible for healing it.
Yeah.
The second form of Kabbalah came along in the 16th century after the expulsion from the Iberian Peninsula after the Inquisition,
mm-hmm.
which was a terrible time. Not just for Jewish folk, it's like the Holocaust, you know, all people who were seen to be wrong. Mm. And a charismatic rabbi called Isaac Luria was inspired or came up with the idea that when the divine made the universe, a mistake was made. And the vessels into which the light flowed shattered. And that formed an external evil that attacked humanity. And that our job was to resist that and to rebuild the world from the mistake that God made. And I can't buy that.
No, I don't buy that either.
I just can't. I understand that people can because they see the world. And it comes from this idea of why do bad things happen to good people?
Mm.
But ultimately, the reason why bad things happen to good people is because the people were too good to see the signs. And too helpful and too kind and too loyal to say, I'm out of here. And that's a very simplistic view of it, but and I'm sure Jewish folk, I hope you don't think I'm denigrating the Holocaust. I am not, or the Inquisition, and I put my hand up and I say, I am so, so sorry for Christianity's part in that. And I'm one woman saying I'm sorry, but please, I am.
Mm.
I really, really am. I'm stopped now.
You stopped. Okay. So I'm intrigued by all that you've just said, just because a thought that I had very recently is that when we speak about, this was particularly in relation to all the marvellous conspiracy theories that there are going around at the moment. And I saw, this is the first time I've had an opportunity to say this out loud, so it'll be interesting to hear it myself. And I know that sometimes I think a thing and then I taste whether it's true when I find it on my own tongue, and sometimes it's really not.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I have those.
Yeah.
And okay, you call me out on it usually. And quite right, too, because that's what discussion is for.
Yeah.
There was a quotation from a little girl once which says, how can I know what I think until I hear what I say?
Oh, great. Great. Wisdom, little girl. Okay, so this is me hearing what I say to figure out if it's really what I think. Was there, all these conspiracy theories are basically a way of, is the word abdicating? Yes, abdicating responsibility for the fact that the world is how it is because of human choice, and that we, as the human, any one of us, or that's not true, any one of us, properly participating in consumer culture is as responsible for the way the world is as fucking Walt Disney or any of the rest of them, just to pick a name at random, and others are far more responsible.
Mm.
But the idea that there is an external evil other than in the minds of men is the same. We're just abdicating responsibility. Mm. And so who's said that amazing thing that the only thing necessary for evil to flourish in the world is for good men to do nothing? Mm. That's the crux of it, as far as I'm concerned, is that bad things happen to good people because too many people, both bad and good, do nothing.
Mm.
They look at over there and they see us someone else or some other place or something else as being responsible. And I'm not remotely suggesting that we're responsible for the bad things that happen to us, but that collectively we are responsible, collectively. And so, you know, collectively, frankly, we're fucking responsible for the Holocaust. Not,
yes.
Yeah, because we did not stand up and say enough.
Yes.
And we're responsible for the witchcraft trials, and we're responsible for the paedophile rings, and we are responsible because we are the capacity to act for good or for evil.
Yes.
And so, you know, we are the devil.
Yeah.
If you like. And we're also God.
Yes. Yes, we are. We are that dual relationship, and we can choose to do something or we can choose not. And I'm going to add an addendum to that, because sometimes that meme on Facebook, you know, for it is used for passive aggression.
Which meme?
The for evil to succeed, it just needs good people to do nothing. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, and it's you that's doing nothing. I'm the one who's raising awareness on Facebook. You're the one doing nothing. Yeah. And that can be used in a way. And I would always say prayer and offering healing are not nothing.
Nothing, absolutely. And also I think it's really important to know that we all have our part to play, mm. and we all have our job to do.
Yes.
And that none of us ever should be getting our knickers in a knot going, oh my God, I didn't save the Yemen or whatever while I was alive, that was happening kind of thing. Because each one of us has our job to do, but so we need to do it.
Yes. But our job, I think it's Byron Katie who said, but lots of people have said it, there's my business, God's business, and everybody else's business. The only thing we have to do is our business. Mm. And how you tell whether it's your business is whether you can bring good and healing to the situation.
Mm.
If you can't, walk away and leave a space for the person who can. Do not stand on the internet shouting about it, because it brings us back to conspiracy theories. What I've been noticing with these is conspiracy theories make the conspirator feel superior.
Yeah.
And they come from exactly the same energy as the thing they're condemning.
Mm.
So they are actually an attempt to take back a control of your life from the egoic view by using blame on the other. Even if all the conspiracy theories are 100% true, then just don't participate.
Hmm.
Live lightly on the land. If you don't want the vaccine, if it actually happens, say no to the vaccine and take the consequences. And stand up and say gently and lovingly, I am choosing not to take this. And if you wish me to isolate myself from society because I'm choosing not to take it, I will do that. But it's so much easier to go, I don't want it because it's wrong and it's evil and you're going to force it on me, because the energy is completely different.
Yeah.
And that's what to sacrifice is. It's to make sacred, to honour your decision and make it sacred and hold to it. And the word martyr nowadays means somebody who's suffering. It means bear witness.
Oh.
A martyr is somebody who bears witness to the divine and bears witness to the good. Does not mean somebody who has to go into a ring beaten by lions.
Mm. Mm. Yes, I like that. Oh God, as usual, my blown mind.
Well, that's right. I'm going to go on and talk about my aromatherapy products. Because you did ask me to do that. I came down here, I wanted to get a natural face cream.
Uh-huh.
And I tried coconut oil, and apart from anything else, it comes from the other side of the planet and all that kind of stuff, though I do use coconut oil. And I found a lovely natural face cream, which was on sale in the local shop, but it troubled me that it was in plastic.
Yeah.
It did trouble me. And there's come a point in my life when every day I say to the angel of our land, please forgive me, I'm going to burn some plastic, because I have bought it and I'm sorry and I will try harder again, but I'm not putting it in the trash to go to Malaysia to, we talked about this before, but the only goal is to not buy the plastic, so that means no more of that face cream.
Yeah.
And I put it up and said, please help, and bless her, a friend of mine gave me Kenwardine aromatherapy products for Christmas in glass with metal lids, beautiful natural face moisturizers. I have dry skin. I do like to have a moisturizer. Mm. If we get the zombie apocalypse, I'm going to have to live without it. But I'm sure we can find something in Evening Primrose oil. But and it was just so lovely that to put the intention and say, I can't go on doing this.
Mm.
Because this is part of the consumer society that I'm purporting to not want to engage in. So I can't just have this because it makes my skin feel good.
But it also, not only is it part of the consumer society we don't want to engage in, it is also exactly what we were just talking about. Your capacity to be the blessing or the curse,
yes,
is utterly dependent on will you or will you not push yourself slightly out of your comfort zone and actually make the effort it takes to not buy the freaking thing in plastic.
Yes.
And yes, thank heavens you will. And we wouldn't be friends if you wouldn't.
which when we start the next one brings us to the question somebody asked, why are we friends, or how did we get to be friends, which we can go with on the next one. But and it, the thing people often say is, what I do doesn't make any difference. I've got a relative who says doesn't recycle because she doesn't see that it makes any difference. Mm. But I am a macrocosm of the microcosm.
Yeah.
And so is she. So it does matter.
Yeah.
Because it's that one drop of healing oil in the ocean.
Yeah. The one little candle in the darkness.
The one candle. Yeah. Better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. And if we don't do it, how can we inspire other people to do it?
Yep. And look at what happened around the whole palm oil thing.
Mm.
So people found out about palm oil. People found out that other people were cutting down forests in order to plant new forests of palm trees, and that was guerrilla habitat, etc., mm. etc. There was an outcry.
And things started to change.
Things changed.
Yes.
Because, not because a billion people signed a petition, not because everybody watched gorillas on TV and wept, but because people started going to their shop of choice, turning the packet over, reading the ingredients and putting it back.
Yes.
If it had palm oil in it.
Yes.
And that's, you know, and over the years I've gone on and on and on about this, and apologies if you've heard it a bazillion times before, but the pennies in our purse are some of the most powerful way mm. we have at our disposal to make change.
Yes.
If we don't buy what they're selling, they cannot sell it anymore.
Mm.
And it's truly as simple as that. And so that now the zero waste movement is massive. It's massive. Yes. It's fantastic. Because more and more people are exactly like you, going, no, thank you, to the plastic one. I don't want it. Mm. Because I don't want to discover that the thing that I feel makes my skin beautiful, and for those of you who can't see and have never met her, Maggie does have very beautiful skin.
Thank you.
That I don't want to know that that ends up on some ocean beach somewhere killing a turtle or whatever it is. You know, it's a very simplistic mm. view. Mm. Or polluting the air in, where was it? Was it Turkey?
It's Malaysia.
Malaysia, okay. I mean, just all the dreadful, dreadful, dreadful things we do. We don't have to do them. There's still beautiful face cream out there available in a glass jar, or beautiful face cream that you can make yourself if you really get into gathering plantain and evening primrose petals and all the rest of it. It's just the only thing we need to do is try. Yes. And it's nowhere near as hard as the majority of people think. And in fact, I did an experiment once. I used to have an ongoing argument about this, about the difference between massively packaged food, which I've always had a kind of, mm. I mean, I'm very lucky in some ways because I never did buy into the kind of plastic consumer culture, because I've always absolutely loathed plastic and packaging, and I just came in that way.
Mm.
So years before we realised that it didn't get recycled and ended up on beaches, I would argue with people about instant plasticky wrapped food versus make it from scratch mm-hmm. food. And always I was given the kind of the battle cry of, but I don't have time.
Yes.
And or that fresh food is more expensive. And I would have people telling me that you know, to buy an organic one, for example, was so much more expensive mm. than to buy a plastic wrap one. But there are so many ways in which that's not true.
Mm.
The first being, just fundamentally, actually, if you do your shopping and buy food from scratch and make it from scratch, I'm sorry, but it is definitely cheaper than even the cheapest of what Lidl can offer. But it does take time. But if you are... So if you are a person who's got more of the capacity to choose, so in other words, not absolutely scraping the barrel for mm. every last penny, then surely it also comes down to the point where you can choose, do I pedal really hard and work, you know, 7.5 days a week so that I can buy the one in the
plastic?
Or do I choose to work less hard, spend less time at work, and therefore spend more time cutting up vegetables? And that, again, that seems to be completely lost in the greater conversation around what are we here to do? What are we here for? How?
And the reason we want all the takeaways is so we can sit and watch Netflix with them.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Right.
Sit and be entertained while eating out of the plastic. I'm sorry if that's very simplistic, but it is very simplistic. But that's the culture that I see. And that's the way it was in ancient Rome. We really are in the last days of ancient Rome again.
Really? They in those days, Netflix? Tell me.
Well, no, but the average person didn't have a kitchen in their apartment in Rome.
Yeah.
And they ate from the streets. They didn't have plastic then, obviously. And they went out for entertainment, bread and circuses. You know, went to the forum to watch people being slaughtered because that was the bread and circuses. We still do that. We just do it virtually. Everything on TV is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So we would rather spend our time observing that than... And this, I'm sorry if I'm sounding judgmental, but since the advent of the freezer, and I know the electricity comes from somewhere, but you've got to do the swings and roundabouts. Since the advent of the freezer, you can cook batches.
Mm.
And my dear friend Adam, who's a teacher, in the summer holidays, he harvests his garden. He's become a passionate vegetable gardener. And he freezes it in batches of lasagnas and things like that. So when he comes back from a really frazzled school day, he will have taken something out of the freezer in the morning. He doesn't use a microwave. And he's got a lovely dinner.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And so it is possible. Well, we're just not training ourselves to do it. And it is a sadness. But I think we can start turning it round. Hopefully.
I heard a great statement the other day, and apologies to whoever it was said it to me, because I don't remember who you were. Maybe I read it. Anyway, I don't remember its origin, but it's not. Its origin was not in my head, which was, the way you live each day is the way you live your life.
Yes.
And that is so true. So if we spend all day sitting in our office chair or whatever it is, followed by all night sat in front of Netflix, that's not really that person. If that person really exists, I don't know. I don't know any of that person personally. But if they exist, then I invite them, as they're probably not listening anyway, but to wonder, is that really what I'm here for? Is that me savouring the joys of my corporeal existence?
But that's the problem with the secular life we've got now. We are not encouraged to look for magic anywhere but in the movies. And in the movies, it's superheroes.
Even just the magic of being in your body.
Yes, but we're not encouraged to feel it. We medicate ourselves out of our bodies.
Yeah.
With our food and our wine and our cigarettes and everything. Well, that's a sad point to end on, isn't it?
Oh, Lordy, have we already rattled on?
Already rattled on, and I wanted to go on with some other stuff, but it's 37 minutes. So sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I don't mean to leave you being miserable because... Hey, life's for living. Life is wonderful.
Life is to savour.
Yes. And anybody who saw the Neowise comet knows that life is extraordinary.
Yes.
Extraordinary. Blessings to you
all. Full of magic. Blessings to you.
We'll see you next week.